You're listening to This Hong Kong Life, a podcast of stories and conversations with everyday youth across Hong Kong. Every week, we bring you episodes that reflect the authentic voices of our local youth sharing their thoughts and feelings of growing up and living in the city we call home. Welcome to Season 7. Very often when we look at something, we are merely taking in the tip of an iceberg. There is always more, much, much more, to what we can see. I'm Renee, the youth host of This Hong Kong Life. I will talk to other young people like me and discover what's under the surface. Welcome back to another episode. Today we have Jel here.
Hi. Great to be here. That didn't sound like great at all. But yeah, great to be here actually.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
So, okay, how's your day been going actually?
My day's been going so well. It's a nice spot here at Kelly's office.
So, you know how like Hong Kong, since it's such an international city,
yeah.
Have you ever like seen people gone through like kind of like identity crisis? Because you know, since Hong Kong is so culturally diverse, you can literally find all kind of people here, I swear.
Yeah.
So like, have you ever like heard of stories of people like being like unable to identify where they're from or where to call home,
yeah,
kind of thing? Because
yeah,
it's too diverse, man.
Yeah. Actually, that's a very, very interesting question, because I feel like identity has been something in these past few years, especially with COVID, it's been something we've all been reflecting on.
Mm-hmm.
So we know it's there. Me being a Filipino, but growing up in Hong Kong, you know, and our city going through a lot of different phases. You know, there was this thing with the umbrellas that happened, and then there was COVID. It really made us think, where are we positioning ourselves as, you know, me as a non-Chinese ethnic person or citizen in Hong Kong. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. There's other communities out there, but I speak on behalf of, you know, my community where, yeah, we face a lot of discrimination. I actually wanted to point out there's one recently, or no, not recent, but when the third wave, I believe, hit, there was this big news about, oh, these Filipino migrant domestic workers, they're
being blamed.
Yeah, they're being blamed. They put down their masks while they're eating, and all of us are like, whoa, you can eat with your mask on? But then they kind of put that on us to say that, COVID is getting worse because they're putting down their masks.
This is like a stereotype of how, like, maybe the Filipino domestic helpers, like, they're unaware of hygiene, but, like, how can, like, what can they do, actually? Like,
mm-hmm,
they can't, like, just eat with their mask on, as you said, or
yes,
it's a public space. There's no law about that. You can't put your mask, like, you can't put your mask off when you're eating, right?
Yeah.
It's just that you have to put it on when you're not eating or not exercising.
Mm.
So I don't know why this has a stereotype, but yes, as, like, a part of, like, community of non-Chinese, like, speaking citizens, I can totally understand that, even though I'm ethnically Chinese. But since I'm from Singapore, I totally understand, like, this point of view as a foreigner.
Yes.
Because, like, growing up, not totally growing up in Hong Kong, but living in Hong Kong for the past, like, 9 years as a Singaporean,
mm-hmm,
I try to understand, like, the local culture in a way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Since, technically, even though people on the street might think, oh, you look Chinese, you're
so
probably
you
from
Chinese,
Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But then, deep down in my heart, I'm just, like, a Singaporean. Like, I might try really hard to fit into the culture and act like a local.
Mm-hmm.
But then, at the same time, it's just hard because I never understand, like, local jokes or anything. Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I feel like I experienced kind of the opposite because, like, people see my skin, right?
Yeah.
It's dark, my accent, I can't speak Cantonese. So obviously they'll know I'm from the Philippines or basically not Chinese. But there are times where you can hear what they're saying. So I'm not saying I'm fluent in Cantonese at all. I'm definitely not. But I'll know if someone's trying to insult me. I know and I feel when someone's talking about my group of friends. Usually they'll say like a huxic or like call fei zai, like the fat guy. Yeah. And we'd know, but we don't have enough of the vocabulary to call them out. Thankfully, we have some friends who have learned Cantonese, so they will call them out. But what I mean by the opposite is, ironically, I would identify more as a Hong Kong citizen as opposed to a Filipino. Though I acknowledge, like, I respect my heritage and I love it. But if people say, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Hong Kong. Because I do get some of the local jokes. I won't say that I grew up with all of them, but you know that I go to school by bus. You'll know when you mention Umbrella Revolution, you know the news about, you know, the white paper being held up, and you'll know where to buy good tech stuff for cheap, right? Like if people ask you that, Sham Shui Po, Mong Kok, right? And if you asked me where to do that in the Philippines, I wouldn't really know where to start. I'd be like, probably in a mall. So it's the same thing. I have more of the attachments and the knowledge here. And I think that's the funny thing about identity is you attach yourself to where you're more comfortable. So where you know the most. Because when you feel unknown to somewhere, it's kind of feeling like you're unsafe or you're not attached to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Hong Kong definitely feels like home to me. But then like in another way, Singapore gives me the warmth. Yeah. Instead, okay. Because my family's here, like my extended family, cousins, everyone's there. But in Hong Kong's only me, my mom, dad, and siblings. So it's like the big family warmth that's always not here. That's why like the sense of belonging, like I do have a sense of belonging to Hong Kong. Oh, like okay. I tell people, yeah, I live in Hong Kong, but then I wouldn't like directly say, yeah, I'm from Hong Kong, because it's like kind of like lonely sometimes in here, like especially when my family's not in Hong Kong, it's like me on my own. And given that I go to an international school, I do realize that like how culturally diverse Hong Kong is once again. Like there's people from Sri Lanka, like Africa, yes, any African definitely. Countries, but that they're always being seen as like ethnic minorities, especially as you mentioned, like skin color, like brown people or black
people. And
then people.
There's just the stereotyping of like what these communities tend to do.
Yeah, they do. Like locals might just feel like, yeah, you guys are just not it. You get what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a huge. I remember we were talking about this before the recording, but there's a huge gap of what people know, or where people stop wanting to know about a culture, right? So I think in Hong Kong, it's not that people don't notice that there are like non-Chinese or culturally diverse communities. Mm. It's just, I don't know if people know how to go further or deeper into how to acknowledge their presence here. They know that there's like Pakistanis in Chongqing Mansion, you know? Mm. They know that there are Indian places, there's Jollibee, so Filipinos must be here. But how do we go further than what is being presented to them on a commercial level, right? So do people get to go inside Chongqing and really speak to the owners? Or, I mean, definitely valid that they're going to be scared to go into this, like, into the unknown. Frozen 2, shout outs. I don't know if I can say that. Disney. Yeah, but people being scared to go into the unknown. And I just think that there's not enough safe spaces where this discomfort can be talked about.
And I definitely think for the ethnic minorities, there's no comfort place in Hong Kong for them to be in. Like, I'm just going to talk a little bit about Singapore, but in Singapore, since like there's like Malay, Chinese, Indians, like in Singapore, there's like, it's not like a segregation, but it's more like there's this place called Little India where all the little like Indians, they really feel like home there. Mm-hmm. But like in Hong Kong, there's like no specific place where maybe the Pakis, they're going to not be like, oh yeah, this is home. This is where like district, a place that I'm totally comfort in. Mm-hmm. Like they always get like weird stares from like the local community somehow.
Yeah.
Like weird stereotyping. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think
it's interesting you pointed out, because having places like those, I think initially can be really nice because it's where everyone congregates, right? So like you mentioned in Singapore, there's these like little somethings, you know, in the US there's Chinatown, whatever. But in Hong Kong, there are places. It's not the most. We don't have names for it, like Little Town.
We don't have Chinatown. Like, yeah, there's no Chinatown in Hong Kong. But Hong Kong is like colonized before. Yeah, yeah. There's white people, black, brown, Chinese.
But definitely, if you ask me where you can find these different cultures, I would say, for example, if Thai, you'll say, oh, Kowloon City is where all the Thai like restaurants are. So there. If you ask me where Filipinos are, it's like central, because domestic workers are there. But that's where they're seen, right? Where a lot of them are seen. But is it their safe space?
Yeah, is it actually where they're comfortable to be?
Or is it because that's where people just push them to be?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Okay, today actually at school, I had a really interesting conversation with my Indian friend, because in India, there's like Northern Indian and Southern Indian. Yes. So she's Tamil Nadu. Yes. So then basically she's like, everyone just thinks that if I'm Indian, I speak Hindu here in Hong Kong. But then people doesn't even know that Tamil is actually a language or a culture. And then she's like, yeah, actually it's kind of uncomfortable. People just assume like I speak Hindi in Hong Kong. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really good. I wanted to share as well because where I work as a... It sounds really boring, but I work as an admission and recruitment officer at my workplace, Caritas Institute of Higher Education, or CIHE, so we can take that out of February. And in my workplace, we have a small community of diverse students. So Muslims, Filipinos, Indian, Pakistani, Filipinos, Nepali, some Bangladesh, some African. And the Muslim community specifically, they were requesting for a prayer room. Mm. And for 3 years, they've been having that request out and it wasn't being fully addressed because, you know, people didn't know what they required. It's a Catholic school, so they assume that, okay, if you need a prayer room, isn't the chapel enough for you?
Yeah.
But it's really good that I work with a team that acknowledges that, no, there's nuances to different cultures.
Mm.
And what they found out, you know, I don't know if a lot of people know, but the girls and guys have to be separated, even in the praying room, like the front and the back. There's 5 times a day they do that, and it has to face in a certain direction.
The Taliban is a good example, because previously there's news like women are, like in Iran or Afghanistan or Iraq, there's like rules where women are not allowed to go out without being accompanied by a male family member. And in Saudi and Iran, like, women are not allowed to drive anymore somehow. Mm. Like, I really, like, this is such like a global issue. It's not even in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just we don't see it all the time in Hong Kong.
It's definitely been put at a global spotlight.
Yeah.
I'm not prepared to say that I know the whole intention or how the religion or culture led to that point.
Mm.
I feel like there's a lot of... I think that's the uncomfortable conversation we're supposed to have, right? Like, how did this country get to this point where everyone else sees it as backwards?
Yeah.
I'm prepared to understand it, but of course I'll have my own, what we call agencies, right? You have your own mind and perceptions and what you've grown up with to say, to me that is wrong or to me that is right, appropriate or inappropriate. And I'm just glad, like, going back to the Muslims in our school, so... They asked for a prayer room and they were able to have it. And they were saying how important it was to have something that is theirs, that touches their identity.
So you know, it's a place that they feel comfortable.
Yeah, because for a long time, you know, being a Muslim in a Catholic school, though we weren't pushing our Catholic ideologies on them, hiding part of your identity is never comfortable long term. There are times you can professionally hide something.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a space that can be toxic to that. So sexuality is one thing, but we're talking about culture, right? But sexuality can be an example. But if you do it for a long time, it's really going to burn you out. So people need that space. People need to be seen and all the parts of them need to be recognized to feel comfortable.
Yeah, I totally see that. Mm-hmm. International school gets stereotyped somehow for like the more privileged more privileged kids and like rich kids. But then actually our school is really nice. We have ran this like refugee program. So since like there's people, like, you know how ethnic minorities, they're forced to like attend a DSE system because of like, because they're economically not like
other curriculums besides the DSE curriculum can be a bit more financially tasking.
Yeah, like they're financially like economically not able to like afford an international school. But then our school is actually really nice. We opened up this refugee kind of program. So like, you know, Hong Kong intake refugees every year.
Yes. Yes.
So actually, like, there's refugees in our school, and I kind of understand like how they feel discriminated in this society. Like, they already lost like their home, and now they're going through another part of like how to identify themselves.
Yeah,
like, will people want to be called
back into this, right?
Exactly. And will people want to be called refugee? Like, I feel like there's technically something happening in my school, like that, like stereotypes, mm-hmm. how people are being discriminated just because of their race and ethnic. Like, yeah. is school even a comfortable place for people at this point? Like, mm-hmm. that's where I want to get to here.
Yeah, actually, even our school, we have cases of refugees who apply, and yeah, the education system makes it has a bit more obstacles for them to applying to our school. But again, it all comes down to, is the team, so I don't know how it is in your school, but for us, the question is the team able to have this uncomfortable situation on, are we willing to put an effort for these students? Because it's always going to be a case by case. And if case by case, it means people, it takes time.
Yeah.
If it takes time, it needs someone to be managing it.
Yeah.
And I guess in the grand scheme of an institute, you know, someone may not have the time or capacity to do it,
yeah.
but we're making that time because we know that access to education or just generally being able to get what everyone is getting, so the equity of it,
yeah.
Is important. I'm not saying that it's a you know, overnight we can fix all of that, but it's a start to even start having these conversations.
Yeah.
What can we do so that refugees or let's say other oppressed communities can get into, one example is proper education.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's, yeah, when people get into this, especially in schools, right, it's like a hub of people, but you don't exactly know
because
who.
Like a place that.
Do you ever feel like you're not belonging to a school? Does that make sense?
Yes,
like your identity
I have.
In a school, right?
I have actually, before, when I first moved to Hong Kong, my parents has put me in this like extremely prestigious school. Like I don't feel comfortable there. Everyone is like talking in Cantonese, and then like I'm like, because I wasn't fluent in Cantonese, but given that I know Chinese, I guess it helped me. But then like I feel like I don't belong there at all. Everyone is so competitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's to a point that I'm like, is this the right environment for me to learn? I was like a 9-year-old girl, and mm-hmm. I was like, damn, we're kids. Why are people already like comparing to each other? Like once they get their test back, they're like, oh, I got like 100, mm-hmm. and everyone's like, oh, I got 99. Like, it's just toxic. That's when I felt like I don't belong there. And since I actually kind of got made fun of for not speaking Cantonese properly, so I'm like, yeah, maybe this is not the right place for me to be. Because I feel like school is always supposed to be a place that students should feel comfortable,
yeah,
like
definitely.
At. But then like,
to be challenged,
is the education
but comfortable
in
challenged.
Hong Kong
yeah.
actually providing this right now? Like,
ooh.
It's questionable.
Mm. Ooh, that's a big question. So, okay. So, in my nature of my work, right, I work with different students in high schools as well, because I go there and I try to give career advising or
yeah.
kind of advising how students can go from secondary to university. And one of the biggest things about that work is knowing that a lot of students in secondary school, they all want to get to the best schools,
yeah.
right? And that can be for many reasons. That can be for many reasons. It could be because of their parents. It could be because of how the teachers...
Or just peer pressure,
yeah.
actually.
Peer pressure, how teachers market it to them. So I will say the education system itself may not be pushing that agenda. It's basically it's there, but it's everyone else around the student who's like, ooh, this is the top 8 because it's funded by the whatever, it has history and whatever, so you should go there.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do, or what, yeah, my team is trying to do, is trying to tell these kids that, do you know why you're getting there? Do you know why you're picking this school? Is it just because it's a good school or because your program is there? The personality of the school. I don't know if people ever talk about
yeah.
personalities of different universities, you know? Like, they're the academics. They're the ones that, like,
yeah.
you don't have to be as social, but if you really want to get your degree in the sciences...
I feel like especially...
You know, there's the personalities, right?
In Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Given that I have some seniors,
yes.
like, since, like, we did IB in our
yeah.
school, like, and they realize they do not fit in with the locals at all, and they have to drop out and, like, go to another UK school or something. And I find it, like... Yeah, so like your med school in Hong Kong might seem like, whoa, it's glamorous.
Sounds great.
Yeah,
but
then
is
it actually where you want to be or where your parents want you to be?
Questions.
Or where you just want to go, like for the attention. Wow, you're so smart. You go to that school. Like, yeah, it's not like
that. We can always unpack that. I feel like a lot of the listeners, youth, right? They need to, sorry, not need to. We encourage you to unpack and process all the reasons why you're looking at a school with a certain, like, pedestal. Why'd you put HKU up there? Is it really because you know the people who are there, and do you know the personality of this school, and is it because you're being told that it is a good school?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I really like that.
Yeah, and I like what you mentioned about you have your seniors who have gone before you and checked it out and whatever. I think for a lot of diverse communities, especially the non-Chinese ones, we don't really have good mentors or alumni who tell the younger generation about stuff like that.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of us, because it's either A, our family just moved here, so our parents only have connection to other parents in the same peer group. Yeah, like in the same community, and then all the children are going through the same. But let me tell you what the reality is here versus the reality in some other universities who, or even not just universities, but careers. Do you really know why you're getting into a business school? Stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I really do see this. Even at
You're going through this, right?
I am going through this right now. And my parents keep encouraging me to be like, yeah, you should apply to Singapore, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, but like, okay, firstly, Singapore is extremely competitive.
Yeah,
and I'm like, me personally, I do not see myself in a Hong Kong school either. But then they're like, oh yeah, since you live here, you should apply. Like, I'm like, I don't really want to go, but I'm just doing it for their fulfillment, I feel like. Like, where I want to be at, like, it's probably going to be US. Mm. And, like, they are supportive about that. But then, like, even though I'm not going, they're just like, yeah, you should apply. So I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm submitting an application just for my parents' fulfillment.
Somehow. Yeah, you know, might as well. They deserve just to know that you did it. But doesn't exactly mean... We are not advocating that you go against your parents. We're just we're saying that you should have a productive discussion.
Yeah, we're not rebels.
We're not rebels. It's just having a productive discussion, and I know that I'm at a point of privilege because I'm already graduated from university.
Yeah.
So I'm done with that life. But I remember that at that point you could also, I know that it's hard to speak out to your parents because maybe you also don't really know what you want to do. And I think a lot of parents just want to know, do you really know what you're doing?
Yeah.
I'm not a parent. I hope not. But I'm not a parent, so I can't say that that's exactly what they want. But my parents, they were just scared that whenever I said I didn't want to do this, the normal path, then they assumed like, oh, you're giving up your life.
Yeah,
but that's not exactly the whole thing.
This is so relevant to us since we live in Hong Kong, and especially like Asian culture, you know, like it's like this, like the stereotype of strict Asian parents. It might be true, like
it's true. The fact that it's a stereotype, it means there was some truth.
Yeah, somewhere. There's like a truth has been presented here, like seeing a lot of my friends go through this, like the smartest kids are always like, yeah, I'm applying to med school. But then, like, deep down when I have a talk with this guy, he was like, I'm choosing, like, between top U.S. schools and med school. I really want to be in the U.S., but my parents want me to do med. My parents want me to be a doctor and everything. I'm like, you shouldn't suppress your feelings.
And I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because, okay, now that we're talking about career, I mean, it's we're also talking about how we can address all of these different points, right? About why we're getting to university, you know, unpack that. And even with career, aside from not having alumni, I think there's also a lack of really knowing what careers are out there.
Yeah.
I think people know like, yeah, med school will get you to be a doctor.
Yeah.
But do they know about all the different branches of doctor? Like there's pharmacists, there could be like nursing, there could be vets. And you know, even in business, if you ask a high school student, what can you do in business? They would probably mention like, oh, you can work in a bank or you're an accountant.
Yeah.
But then there's also marketing. People can go into social media marketing, copywriting. And even in education, when I say that I work in CIHE, like a school, right? Then they would assume like, oh, so you're a teacher. It's like, no, I'm admin.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, like in the general office? No, like admission and recruitment. They're like, what? And then you have to explain that there's a whole nother side to what you know in education and even with other jobs. If I say that I work in music industry, right?
Or you're a drummer.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be in a band. There are admin stuff to this too. Like I can work with accounts executives for stuff.
Even accounting.
Cathay, right? Yeah. People assume Cathay, oh, flight attendant. But like, no. Or even pilot.
Or you could be an aerospace engineer.
Yeah, you could be an engineer there. You could be part of the trainers there that help teach.
Yeah.
Or a lot of companies now, they also have their social awareness branch.
Yeah.
So about diversity and inclusion. People who want to address these belonging issues in the corporate sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very... Like, all of these different career nuances, people don't know. Even Kelly, right? Like, Kelly would... But, like, Kelly, HK, like, they have different departments still. There's communications, there's that. You don't have to be a social worker to work in an NGO. There's so many ways to get to where you need
to be. I totally understand this because, for me, like, I'm going through this uni application process. Yeah. And since I want to go into the field of, like, public health and epidemiology, people just ask me, what field is that under? Like, politics, geography, or med? I'm like, it's part of med. I was like, but then it's not like I'm going to be a doctor, pharmacist, vet, but I want to be an epidemiologist. Because I feel like COVID has inspired me. Like, how, like, health policies and healthcare system is so messed up right now. I just want to go into that. That's my reasoning. And then people are like, oh, it's so specific. I'm like, yeah, because it's something I want to do. Of course I know about it.
There's a need. Exactly. There's a need. People need to know, like, what they actually want to address in the world. Like, I don't know if everyone... is at that point, but I feel like to make your life fulfilled, you gotta know your nobility, what you want to leave in this world, what you want to do for the world. And I know some people are like, I don't care about the world, it doesn't care about me, but eventually you'll get to the age or maturity, I'm not there yet, but that maturity where you'll realize, like, money isn't that important, money or whatever. So am I still happy with what I'm doing? And I know that's a lot of privilege because, you know, some people, they have to work for money's sake to survive. And do that. Do that grind. Survive. Once you start surviving, you begin to thrive, meaning, you know, nobility and your value, what you want to leave in the world. So I can't even say it. Yeah. That one's really cool. I'm pretty sure it's not going to be the last time we thought that the Black Plague was the last time. So this is... definitely not the last time we're gonna have something like this, but to be prepared in the next.
And even like.
Knock on wood.
Like, there's disease everywhere, like AIDS in Africa.
Just because.
Uncurable. Uncurable, like HIVs and everything. I feel like always a way to prevent it. So, Jel, I heard you're traveling soon, right?
Who told you? Okay. Yeah, I am, actually. I'm going to be traveling to my hometown, the Philippines, this week, actually, this Friday. Going to be at a wedding and also just enjoy...
Right. That's actually so amazing. Because, since we've been trapped here for quite a while... Like, I don't know. I've traveled 3 years ago when COVID first hit. I was stuck in Singapore.
No.
Then I came back and... 21 days quarantine, so fun.
Oh,
then I traveled again this summer to go back to Singapore, and then I went to Thailand in October, Japan 2 weeks ago, and in about 2 weeks I'll be in Philippines traveling.
I'll see you there, maybe.
Korea from Philippines. And because originally our plan was to go to New York, but then mom's like, it's too far, we're not going.
Yeah, isn't it great now that we can, like, travel? I mean, Hong Kong is one of those places that finally, you know, we have...
It's going to be a tourist place.
Yeah, we have enough restrictions loosened to be able to travel. And I'm glad you brought up traveling because I feel like with everything we've talked about in identity, I feel like one of the struggles is this, like, I don't want to say ignorance, but it's this lack of exposure to everything. And I feel like traveling... can be one of these ways that you can get out of your routine in Hong Kong and, or even anywhere you are, and find out and appreciate what is different in another culture and what you can find more appreciative in this city. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I feel like definitely, like, we can like go out to the nature, like even though if you don't want to travel at this point because COVID still obviously exists, we're still having a mask on, just go to the nature, explore Hong Kong. It's beautiful here. Yes. Right. All right, so that's it for today. Thank you, Jal, for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rene, for having me here. Yeah. Thank you so much. I hope everyone enjoyed.
Yeah. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This Hong Kong Live is an initiative of Kelly Support Group. We are a youth organization empowering young people to reach their full potential in Hong Kong. If you like the show, please subscribe and get new episodes every week. We would love to hear from you. Nominate yourself or a friend to share next. Drop us a note at hklife@kely.org. See you next time!